The Precinct Omega Weekly Podcast is supported by Horizon Wars Zero Dark, sci-fi skirmish war games in a fallen earth. Visit Wargame Vault at wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
Unusually, it's not Friday. In fact, it's Thursday, but today is Thursday the 24th of December. It's Christmas Eve, and I am not recording a podcast on Christmas Day. So I thought I'd record a podcast today. It'll be out to all my patrons on Christmas Day. So Merry Christmas to all of you, and everybody else will get this on Bank Holiday Monday. Merry Christmas to everybody and a Happy New Year to those of us heading into 2021 and a good riddance to 2020, no question. This is one of those game design episodes that I promised I was going to do every other week. I did one and then I had a laptop problem and I was off air for a few weeks. Last couple of weeks I've done news episodes, partly because I lost count, partly because I had news I wanted to talk to, but mostly because I had Thomas Rawlings from Auroch Digital that I was very keen to speak to before the Christmas break. And if you missed my conversation with Thomas about hybrid digital and tabletop games, then please get yourself back onto the podcast, onto precinctomega.podbean.com, and go and listen to last week's episode. And I'm sort of following up that episode this week because that whole digital tabletop hybrid concept felt sort of quite a futuristic topic to be discussing, and that fell at the same time, of course, that Cyberpunk 2077 released for PC and console and immediately dropped into controversy as Sony ditched it from their stores and gave everybody refunds because it's so buggy. But nevertheless, it's got everybody talking about Cyberpunk. And I even went and listened to an episode of Tabletop Minions where they were discussing, or he was discussing, can you tabletop game Cyberpunk? Now, the obvious, it's a slightly kickbaity title, I have to say, because yes, obviously you can tabletop Cyberpunk. There are a number of games that tabletop Cyberpunk, but I wanted to use this episode both to address that question, but also to unpack what the design challenges are with Cyberpunk, how you could approach some of those challenges and deal with them in ways that I think are or are not good or bad, and also just to talk about the Cyberpunk genre in a little bit more detail. Because it's one that's always really appealed to me when I was growing up, when I was learning my way into the tabletop hobby. And in recent years, I found myself, I wouldn't say falling out of love with Cyberpunk, but perhaps taking a more critical view of it. I still really like the genre. I'm actually working on a game myself at the moment, which we'll talk about, which is Cyberpunk themed. I still love the fiction. I still love Cyberpunk anime. You know, it's still a genre, an aesthetic that appeals to me, but my perspective has changed with time, and we'll sort of unpack that a bit as well. So, first thing is I wanted to sort of talk about that opening question that Tabletop Minions put out there, which is, can you wargame Cyberpunk? Yes, of course you can. There is an Osprey game, Reality's Edge, which is specifically a Cyberpunk skirmish game. You know, I'm surprised there aren't more Cyberpunk skirmish games out there, but that is the sort of the headliner when people think about it, which is interesting because it's not been out all that long. I am yet to get my hands on it. I've been meaning to order it all year and I just haven't got around to it, but I will eventually. There are other games as well. There's Hardwired, which is a solo or co-op skirmish game. There are Cyberpunk RPGs like Cyberpunk Red, on which Cyberpunk 2077 is sort of based. There are Cyberpunk board games. Oh, I should mention, before anybody complains, I should mention Shadowrun as well, Cyberpunk RPG of great, what's the word? It's been around for a long time. That's what I mean. I'm trying to find a fancy word for it, but it's been around for ages. And if you don't know Shadowrun is kind of cyberpunk overlaid with fantasy. So there are fantasy races in a cyberpunk world. Anyway, then there are cyberpunk board games. There's Human Interface, is one which most people say the game is absolutely atrocious. People have been waiting a long time for the second edition of the rules to fix all of the problems in the original rules, but nobody can deny it does look very pretty and the miniatures are quite nice. And then there are things like Android Netrunner, which used to be published by Fantasy Flight Games, has gone away now, but that was a living card game that was very cyberpunk because it was an asymmetric card game where one player played the corporation, one player played the Netrunner, the hacker, who was trying to steal their secrets. Android Netrunner, really interesting cyberpunk-themed living card game. Ultimately flawed, but thematically it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it in the early days. And like with so many of these games, when a game is sort of pitched as a competitive game, when it first comes out, I love it. I love the thematicness of it. I love the ideas behind it, the concepts, the narrative. And then as soon as it becomes competitive, all the fun just kind of leeches out of it because people are only interested in competitive plays and competitive builds and smashing their opponent. And that narrative fun leaks out of the game. I'm to Android Netrunner. It's happened to X-Wing. It's happened a little bit to Infinity as well. I'm not going to talk about that today. Might be a topic to cover another time. There are other sort of cyberpunk approximate games, and I would put within that Necromunda. Necromunda, of course, Games Workshop game. It's a skirmish game set in the underhive of the Imperial world of Necromunda. So it's gang warfare, which a lot of cyberpunk is. But it's grimdark, gothic, sci-fi, so it doesn't have a lot of the important elements of cyberpunk. It's got some of them, but not all of them, and we'll look at what those are. Then we've got Infinity, a game I've talked about a lot because I'm a fan of a lot of what they've done. I would say Infinity is not itself a cyberpunk game, but that's not because of the game, that's because of the setting. I think you could play Infinity in a different setting with basically the same rules and call it a cyberpunk game. It just wouldn't use the Infinity setting. The Infinity setting itself is not cyberpunk. It's too far in the future, it's multi-planet, it's got aliens invading, it's mostly military focused, which cyberpunk is not. So you could play a cyberpunk game with the Infinity rules, but not in the Infinity setting, or at least not in the conventional Infinity setting. So my thoughts on Infinity. And of course, Zero Dark. Now, Zero Dark, I usually describe as milpunk. And somebody asked me the other day, what do I mean by milpunk? Which is a good question. I'm not sure where I first heard the term milpunk. But milpunk, military punk, takes some of the aspects of cyberpunk, which is typically you've got a strong expression of individualism, you've got an anti-authoritarian theme within the narrative, you've got those cyberspace aspects that we'll talk about later, but in a structured combat setting, so in a structured warfare. And that's what I call milpunk. So it's like, imagine your cyberpunk gangs have decided to give up their criminal ways and join the Marine Corps and straighten out their lives. That's milpunk. Yep. Okay. So I could describe Zero Dark as milpunk. Now, as it happens, I am working on a game at the moment. It's a supplement for Zero Dark called Antediluvium. Antediluvium is a portmanteau of Antediluvian and Delirium, the idea being that this is a version of Zero Dark set before the Fall. The Fall is a narrative beat that takes place in the story of Zero Dark. It's a asteroid strikes the Earth and initiates the storyline of Zero Dark. Antediluvium is set before the Fall, and it's set in the crowded city-states of Earth, where those who refuse to buy into the status quo sort of fight to keep their independence and to maintain their territory against each other and stuff like that. So it's very much a cyberpunk theme. So effectively, I'm doing what I've just recommended you could do with Infinity, which is you could play Infinity in a different setting. I'm doing the same as Zero Dark. It's a milpunk game, but I'm going to provide a setting that's cyberpunk. Now, I should say this is not imminent at all. It might be out by the end of 2021, so don't hold your breath, but just let you know that I'm working on that. However, I didn't start this podcast to talk about how to tabletop cyberpunk specifically. What I wanted to talk about in more detail were the challenges that cyberpunk specifically brings to the designer who is thinking about how to tabletop cyberpunk. So the first one is probably the most obvious, which is that cyberpunk is a naturally skirmish level genre. I saw it described the other day as high-tech, low-life. So the kind of large, organized conflict that you would see in a platoon plus level kind of a game is not good cyberpunk fodder. You can't imagine really that kind of organized, structured conflict being a part of a truly cyberpunk environment, because that's the point about it being cyberpunk. The punk is the anti-authoritarian figure. It's the individual against the collective. You know, the great opponent in the cyberpunk environment is the man, capital T, capital M. And so you naturally tend towards low number games, which is why it's so suitable to an FPS like Cyberpunk 2077. It's why it's so suitable to a roleplay game like Cyberpunk Red, where it's a handful of heroes banding together against the greater evil. However, having said that, that doesn't mean that you couldn't have a cyberpunk themed game where you looked wider. Now, I don't think genuinely there's any way you could really go for a cyberpunk battle level game. A platoon plus game wouldn't work in cyberpunk, because then you'd be shifting into milpunk. Basically, it would lose important aspects about the individual. But you could play it at a higher level than that yet. So you could have a scenario when you are playing, just like Netrunner, where you play the corporation, or you play the government, or you play the rebel forces, rather than just an individual rebel. You play, you know, the opposition. So that you can play a force as a character in a cyberpunk environment. And there's a game which never made it to market, but which really sort of touched upon this. It was called Conspiracy Tactics. It was one of the first games to be put onto Kickstarter when Kickstarter was a really new platform. And I really mean it. I mean, it hadn't even been around, I think, for a year when Conspiracy Tactics was put on there. It didn't successfully fund. People were still very cautious, very suspicious of Kickstarter. I backed Conspiracy Tactics. It was the first Kickstarter I ever backed. It was a very interesting game. It wasn't a finished game. It wasn't polished. I might even have talked about it before on this podcast. I'm not sure. But in it, each player represented an organization within the sort of the world of conspiracy criminalism. Or criminal conspiracy theories, or something like that, or whatever. So you were big, you know, you were at the top. And so it played a really exciting game. You moved enforcers around, you moved hackers, you moved activists, you moved politicians. And it really sort of captured that sense of a dystopian cyberpunk world, where the actions of the individual didn't matter, well, although they mattered, but not to the individual, they mattered only to the greater forces that were manipulating them. And I thought that was a really cyberpunky theme. And I do have a little dream one day. I've still got the contact details of the guy who wrote Conspiracy Tactics, and I did briefly work with him on trying to polish the rules for a release years and years ago. I'd really like to come back to it one day, because I thought the game had a huge amount of potential. Very, very interesting, compact little tabletop game. Anyway, so there are options to take the tabletop of Cyberpunk and make it bigger, but not in a miniature sense, unless you're using miniatures in an abstract way, like you could in a game like Conspiracy Tactics, where it's not like two people are actually interacting on a conventional tabletop with terrain and such like. They're simply board pieces, board game pieces, representing figures within a game. Okay, so you know that can be done, but it's not true miniatures wargame. The other aspect, and this is something which I don't think other people have really talked about when talking about the challenges of Cyberpunk, but which came to me when I was sort of brainstorming this idea, is what I call amateur hour street violence. I have to confess to a guilty pleasure, which is watching YouTube videos of real-life street fights, you know, where somebody has used their smartphone to record two people or a group of people really going at it on the street. I do this because of my interest in martial arts. I'm always interested to see the impact of violence used in earnest. I'm always interested to see what kinds of techniques people reach for when they're desperate, and what the real threats of street violence are. And if you're interested in self-defense, I would recommend it. But what I take away game design-wise is nothing to do with that. It's the fact that street violence is wretched. It's tragic. It's hilarious in a way that makes you feel guilty because people are being really hurt. It's vainglorious because you see this macho posturing and all the stuff that goes along with violence that isn't violence itself. And of course, the other thing is it is terribly, terribly dangerous. You know, one thing these videos show you is how easy it is to be seriously injured, often not from the violence itself, but from falls, from landing awkwardly, from landing in a place you didn't expect, or where there's glass on the floor or a metal pipe or something. You know, and none of these videos show graphic injury. I think they'd be removed if they did, but you can see how close graphic injury is in these encounters. So I feel like in an environment like Cyberpunk, where it really is amateur hour street violence, there ought to be many options for accidental injury. Accidentally hitting your allies, accidentally killing a passerby, accidentally killing people you didn't intend to kill. But as a designer, whilst that conveys the sense of amateur street violence, the risk is that it takes away agency from the player. Because the player wants to punch that person in the face. They don't want to kill them. But if there's always a chance to kill them, it's capturing something important in the cyberpunk genre, but at the same time making it potentially a less engaging gaming experience. And I think that's a challenge to overcome. And you kind of have to basically go one way or the other. Either it becomes, you know, comedy hour in street violence, or you have to take this this idea of the street samurai in a direction that leaves me slightly uncomfortable. So, you know, the street samurai is supposed to be the elite fighter, the elite street fighter who does things in a clean, cool, elegant way. They kill the people they intend to kill, and they don't kill the people they don't intend to kill, if you follow me. But in practice, that is making something cool that I don't think deserves to be cool on an ethical level. Now, maybe I'm splitting hairs, maybe I'm wrong. And don't get me wrong, I see the aesthetic appeal of the street samurai, and there will be nods towards that in my own cyberpunk game design, but there will also be nods to the fact that the street samurai isn't elegant, isn't cool, is in fact a dangerous psychopath. You know, nobody goes out onto the streets with a samurai sword without being a dangerous psychopath. You know, that's what that means. You know, somebody who goes for an evening walk, visibly tooled up, is not somebody you want to mess with, but it also doesn't mean that they're good at what they do. They're just dangerous. Anyway, enough. I think that belongs in Cyberpunk. Needs to be acknowledged. But all of that really... And I can see a lot of people glossing over that for the aesthetic. What you can't gloss over in Cyberpunk is the cyber part of Cyberpunk. And how you invoke a virtual world on a physical tabletop is the real major challenge to establishing a cyberpunk theme in a tabletop game. Now, my approach to that in Zero Dark, and I've said Zero Dark isn't a cyberpunk game, but it could be, and Infinity is very similar, is essentially to envision an augmented reality world. So those who are jacked in, your hackers, your Ewoks, whatever, they perceive the same world as everybody else, but more so. So they will see the hints and the tips and the clues. They will see their digital environment as an overlay on the real environment, which is very cool. And I talked about the Tilt 5 augmented reality headset last week and what that very real technology could eventually potentially do for the experience of tabletop games. And I think that's super cool. But cyberpunk, true cyberpunk, isn't about an augmented reality. It's about a virtual reality. It's about an immersive, fully conscious experience of an alternative world. And capturing that is hard. As I say, Zero Dark and Infinity do it by half-heartedly adding... Not half-heartedly, it's not fair. We commit to the augmented reality. There are other games that have tried to do it. One game, and I'm trying to find out its name, but nobody has been able to remind me yet of what it was called. But years ago, there was a tabletop miniatures board game where the board was made up of sort of, if I remember rightly, it was like 4x4 or 6x6 squares, double-sided squares. One side was the physical world and the other side was the virtual world. And the characters, the miniatures in the game, could flip from one to the other as they went in and out of their virtual experience. And I thought that was a very imaginative and innovative approach to solving it. But it did limit it to being a board game, and of course it imposed limitations of its own sort. So what if you have two characters in the same space, but only one of them's in the virtual world and the other one isn't? And I'm, because I can't remember what the game was called, I can't remember how they resolved it. But it's just an example of the kind of challenges that the designer has to overcome. And I think that cyber aspect of cyberpunk, which the digital platform, like Cyberpunk 2077, is so good at evoking. And the theatre of the mind that you get in roleplay games like Cyberpunk Red, again, is so good. I mean, it's almost better than the FPS of the digital platform is to do it all theatre of the mind, but what is virtual reality? What is cyberspace if not a theatre of the mind? But for the tabletop miniatures war game, it's much, much harder. You know, there are a lot of ways you could do it. Do you have a sideboard? Do you do the augmented reality approach? Do you have flipping cards? Do you have some kind of side game or mini game involved? That's not to say there's no solution. There are lots of possible solutions, and exploring those possible solutions is part of the joy, of course, of writing a game like this. But all of them involve compromises of some sort. All of them are somehow going to leave the player, some players anyway, less fulfilled from the experience than they were hoping to be. And in a way, I'm making a mistake by making this podcast, because one thing I can't tell you is how Reality's Edge deals with it. And I know some of the people listening to this have already played Reality's Edge, already own it. I don't, and that's a mistake on my part. I not only should I own it because it looks like a good game, but and Joe Maguire, the author, is an awesome guy that I'd like to support. But also it would inform me on how Joe approached that particular problem in more detail. So feel free to comment on this podcast. Let me know how he did it. I can assure you I will get my hands on a copy of Reality's Edge within the next month, and then I'll know the answer myself. So that kind of wraps me up when it comes to talking about the challenges of cyberpunk and tabletop miniatures games. As I say, I haven't put forward any solutions. I've just sort of talked about the compromises and challenges that the design has to face, which is kind of what these podcasts are for. They're not necessarily to blow my own horn about the perfect way I've solved this problem or that problem, but to give you listeners an idea of the challenges that you might face if you want to write a game, or to appreciate the challenges that designers have to overcome, and talk through how we deal with that. But before I go, I did want to answer a sort of a bigger question, and it's a slightly sort of depressing question for a Christmas podcast, I'd be the first to admit. But that question is, do we already live in a cyberpunk world? There used to be an edition of Cyberpunk Red called Cyberpunk 2020. And here we are in 2020, the disaster zone that it has been as a year. Are we already in a cyberpunk world? And there are arguments in favour of that and arguments against it. I think one of the interesting things about cyberpunk as a genre is that it offers us some counterintuitives or some contradictions or some paradoxes that the game designer doesn't have to address. But if we're going to think about cyberpunk, it's interesting to pick them out. One of those is the fact that fundamentally, technology is built by the corporations, and the corporations are the enemy, and yet the cyberpunk, the individual, is packing themselves with technology. I mean, that's part of what makes cyberpunk. It's augmented limbs, it's neural implants, it's retinal overlays. You know, that's what cyberpunk's all about. So the cyberpunk themselves is enabling and participating in the system that provides power to the corporation. So the cyberpunk who thinks that he or she is an opponent of the corporation is in fact their most enthusiastic ally. And in some ways, in some writers' handling of cyberpunk, that is part of the exploration. I think in most tabletop exploration, we're really mostly interested in the aesthetic, and we don't deal with that, but we could. Which leads me on to another thing, which is that in a cyberpunk environment, the pathway to success is self-harm. You know, if you look at the aesthetic vision of the successful cyberpunk, they have chips in their brain, they've got artificial eyes, they've got bionic limbs, they've got physical enhancements that require them to mutilate themselves or to experience mutilation before they can have those enhancements. And there's a metaphorical aspect to that that, again, some writers have explored but most ignore. And if you're going to think about the design of a cyberpunk game that is more than just an aesthetic gloss on a set of mechanics, then it is something that's worth bearing in mind, that you've got this fundamentally paradoxical and quite dark aspect to what success looks like in the cyberpunk aesthetic. And my thoughts when we ask ourselves whether 2020 is a cyberpunk time is that if we address those contradictions and those paradoxes, we see a world very like our own. We are enthralled to corporations. Politics is a corrupt battle between vested interests. Dictators and oligarchs are gathering an unmatched level of power, particularly in Russia and China. And I mean, especially for those parts of our community that are going to be listening to podcasts like this one, we do conduct a large portion of our lives in what amounts to a virtual environment, all being one that is presented to us on a screen or through our ears than in an immersive environment as yet. The real punks, though, in our 2020 world are not particularly cyber. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who think they are, you know, these anonymous collectives and white hat hackers and stuff like that. But ultimately, even those people, they're like the cyberpunks. They are ultimately enabling the victory of the corporation because they rely upon what the corporation can give them to experience the lives that they want to lead. The real punks are those who are rejecting technology and the corporations, who live off the grid, who pursue self-sufficiency, who campaign for change, demanding that governments pay attention to the existential crises of climate change and international corruption. It's fairly dark stuff, I realise, for a Christmas podcast. But the people who are following the cyberpunk line, filling themselves with tech, are the opposite of punks in our 2020 world. We've got Alexa, Roomba, smartwatches, Fitbits. The people who adopt technology unto themselves, well, they're not sellouts, but I think it's fair to say that they are buy-ins. They have bought into the digital cyber world of 2020. We are not punk. We are not rebels. We are participants in the system. But what's the right thing to do? And this brings me to my sort of final point on a game design line, which is that the last quality a cyberpunk game, or indeed any cyberpunk product, needs to have is this sense of amorality. The idea that knowing the right thing to do is impossible. Or, alternatively, that the right thing to do is clear, but so difficult, so outside the comfort zone of any of the participants that it's impossible to actually do. Which is why in true cyberpunk, even the most rebellious, violent of cyberpunk protagonists is ultimately complicit in maintaining the status quo. So if you're writing a game or thinking about playing a game in a cyberpunk setting, that's something which I would strongly recommend you try and embed within, in the sense of not just the setting, but also the gameplay and the mechanics, that it's a place where the decision-making should be complex, should be challenging, should force players to confront the idea that there isn't always an easy answer to what decision they should take. Now, I've brought that down a fair way, and I'm going to wrap up the podcast now. I hope I'm still recording. Yep, looks like I'm still recording. That's a good thing. Occasionally, my recorder just shuts off for no apparent reason, and I've lost masses. I did this at the start of this podcast. If you noticed a jump anywhere, it was because I lost about 5 minutes of recording. Luckily, I noticed in advance. But enough of that. Let's bring it back up. Because it is Christmas, you know, this is a time of hope, a time of renewal. The whole reason, thematically, that Christmas falls at this time of year is because this is the point at which we've got to the darkest place and things are turning around. You know, the darkest day of the year, of course, is the longest day of the year is the 21st of December in the Northern Hemisphere. Sorry to my Australian listeners. In the Northern Hemisphere, it's the 21st of December. From this point, the days start to get longer. So we've reached the darkest point. We're at the time where the tide starts to turn. And although I've said that 2020 feels like a cyberpunk year, I think we're also at a time where there is an opportunity to change that. And, you know, we've seen some good stuff. We have seen vaccines for the coronavirus being developed and starting to be rolled out. We can imagine an end to the threat of the infection. We have seen a toxic president, not win a second term. Whether his alternative proves to be an improvement, we have yet to see. But it does represent to me, a non-American, a sign that perhaps all hope for America is not lost, and it can still be a model for hope and for opportunity that, that non-Americans have often sort of traditionally seen it as being. This is a good thing. And I think also we've learned some stuff through 2020. You know, we've learned what's important, I think, sometimes. We've seen alternative ways to live. As a HR professional in my other line of work, you know, to see companies forced to adopt home working and remote working, and then to discover that not only does it work, but it actually works better than forcing everybody into their cubicles every day. You know, that's given me hope. To see people spending more time with their families and discovering that there is pleasure in that, that's given me hope. To see people cut off from parts of their families and their friends and to find what a gap that leaves in their lives, that too gives me hope. To have lost physical contact with so many people with whom I took physical contact for granted that I won't in the future, that gives me hope. So here we are at Christmas. The days are starting to get longer. The light is starting to return. Whatever your spiritual or religious leanings, that's the mystical social message of Christmas. And if 2020 felt like a dark time, I think there are signs that we have seen the light, and that 2021 and beyond could see us from slipping deeper into the dystopian future that cyberpunk games and cyberpunk literature has depicted as not being a place where we want to live. So whilst it's fun to visit these dystopian spaces, we don't really want to exist in them. And I hope that you and me and your friends and family and everybody in our society, our leaders, are going to see the society that 2020 told us we might be if we don't change, and the society we could be if we do. So that's a kind of I hope, an uplifting take on the darkness of cyberpunk. I hope you don't mind me waxing lyrical once I finish talking about game design, but I'm not going to claim your ears any longer. Thank you very much for listening to this. Happy Christmas to everybody, and a successful new year to all of you listening. I probably won't be doing a podcast next week, unless I unexpectedly find time I don't expect to have, because I'm going to be focused very much on relaxing and looking after my family. But we'll be back to normal in the first week of 2021, and I will speak to you all then.
The Precinct Omega Game Design Podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Precinct Omega. To help us continue developing new games and creating hobby content for war games enthusiasts all over the world.